This is Word Radio.
Jason Capper here, asking you to help us save the C-53 Beat City Baby from the Scrapper's Torch. Folks, every dollar goes directly towards the restoration so that we can fly her again. Donate now at www.vintagewingsinc.com. That's vintagewingsinc.com. Our time is limited, and the need is now. So again, please go to www.vintagewingsinc.com. And help us save our C-53 Beat City Baby.
Live from the land of the free, because of the brave, this is Warbird Radio.
Well, good evening, everybody. Matt Jolly here with you for the 17th of May. Hard to believe it's been 30 years since Top Gun, man. Have you seen all of that stuff that's on all over social media? Facebook.com has a whole bunch of that stuff. my favorite one, I'm laughing here just looking at this thing. My favorite one are the two ducks in the pond, and then there's Goose just kind of over there in the reeds looking longingly. Oh, man. I can't wait to go to Miramar this year. That is going to be the bee's knees, as they said back in the 30s, but 30 years since the movie Top Gun. Hey, how did that affect you? I'd love to hear from you tonight. Number to dial, 478-787-4768, if you want to get on the show tonight. And we have some awesome guests in an awesome lineup this week for the next 2 hours. In case you don't know, on the show tonight, Andrew Rodriguez. He's with the RU21A Memorial Project out of Orlando, Florida. He'll be joining us. Also, we have an update tonight from Jason Capra, part of the Beach City Baby guys, that are saving the C-53 called Beach City Baby, a historic airplane, and they're going to be returning it to flight with the help of you. And we need your help tonight, so let's make that happen. We pushed the needle a little closer, around $2,300 is what we raised last week. So let's try and do that again this week and just push these two projects, both worthwhile projects, to goal. And I want to talk about that, because this summer, as you're out and about and you're visiting air museums, you're going to air shows, and you inevitably will see this debate pop up online. Someone will say, man, why did they paint this airplane this way? Why did they do this with this air? Whatever it is, that's always the argument. And here is your chance. Maybe you're not an aircraft owner. Maybe you're not a member of one of these big organizations, but here is your chance to leave your mark. Put your money where your mouth is if you want to save these airplanes, and do something about it. $5, $10, $20, whatever it is, any amount will help. And the two projects that we're featuring tonight, I'm telling you, these are projects that are going to be paid for, not by large donors, but by folks just like you. And if you don't believe me, take a listen to Mr. Andrew Rodriguez right now, who's standing by from his home down there in Florida. Andrew, am I right about that? This is not a million-dollar project, is it?
No, it's a pretty humble goal that we've got. You know, it's never going to fly again, but we're going to put it in a place where it'll have good company, because we're looking to put it next to a B-52D model that is already at a really quiet corner of Orlando International Airport.
And very good.
Give it to
cool.
The company.
Well, the RU-21A Memorial Project, Mr. Andrew Rodriguez joining us now from his home down in Orlando. We have a project link to this in the story right now that you can click on, and it'll take you to the RU-21A Memorial Project. This is a King Air that you were intimately involved with, running anti-narcotic missions back in the 80s while you were serving in the Guard as an electronics warfare officer in the back. Now, we don't talk about this too much. Post-World War II, this is an Army aviation project, the 138th, I guess, aviation company down there in Orlando that actually flew and operated this airplane. This is a really cool story. Tell me the story of this of the 138th and in this particular RU-21A.
Yeah, you bet. You know, the genesis of the unit actually goes back to Vietnam. And in 1966, the 138th Aviation Company was founded, along with some sister companies, to conduct signals intelligence gathering and direction finding of Viet Cong and North Vietnamese Army radio transmitters throughout the countryside. And so the unit initially flew the RUAD, which is a Beechcraft Twin Bonanza. That's kind of the great grandpappy.
Right.
And that aircraft flew all over Vietnam and then was joined later by RU-21s. And together they traversed the countryside listening to Morse code signals, listening to Vietnamese spoken in the clear, and doing direction finding and reporting the locations they were finding. And in many cases, more than one example, they called in a B-52 strike on a suspected transmitter. So,
When you really want to take care of it, you call in the B-52. Isn't that cool? So, when you want to eliminate all potential problems, call in the B-52. I love it. And this thing's going to be sitting right beside a B-52 here pretty soon.
That's kind of what we love about it. That's the whole thing. I mean, after Vietnam, the unit was deactivated only to be reactivated as a reserve unit in Orlando in 1974. And, you know, the aircraft, the U-21s that we got, they didn't just fly 1 week in a month and 2 weeks a year. It wasn't long before we were involved in some of the very earliest efforts against communist rebels in El Salvador. And so we made our mark in Central America. And back in the day, there used to be a Soviet brigade in Cuba. So, you know, draw your own conclusions as to why we would need to go down to Key West twice a year and fly out of the Naval Air Station down there. But then, of course, the drug stuff, too. And in the middle of all that stuff, you know, we got the call to move halfway around the world for Desert Storm.
It's an impressive history that this aircraft has, and this particular RU-21A, the one that you're trying to save and put on static display there at the Orlando International Airport, is one that you yourself flew missions on as a veteran in the Guard there. And I think that's so cool that this is really a grassroots effort by a group of veterans who were tied to this aircraft. So, you know, what we used to see at the end of Korea and Vietnam when folks at the VFW hall were putting up a war memorial. This is the same thing, but man, I mean, this is new stuff. This is Gulf War and even post Gulf War vets that are coming together to make this happen. So I wish you the best of luck with this, Andrew, and I hope that folks are going to hear this, because the amount of money that you need to raise to do this is not the same type of budget that's going to get a big donor in. And I think that, you know, the small deals are always the hardest, aren't they? It's not like you can go to, you know, a big bank and have a grandiose plan to restore and fly a four-engine warbird. I always say that it would be easier to get a B-36 flying than it would be to do this type of work, because this is hard stuff. This is Ma and Pa's hard-earned $50 that they're either going to go down and spend at the restaurant, or they're going to give to you to make this project happen. What do you need money-wise to get over the barrel here and get this thing on display?
Well, you know, first I got to say we've been extremely fortunate in that, you know, finding the aircraft and where it ended up and getting the aircraft essentially donated to our group for free, that was a big one. There's a connection to Joe Kittinger in that Joe Kittinger down in Orlando, he's a local hero, and he had an F-4 Phantom put up at Orlando Executive Airport, and he managed to get some Delta Airline mechanics to volunteer to help him with the F-4 and refurbishing it and putting it on display in Orlando. And when he got wind of our project, he asked the Delta guys that worked for him, say, would you mind helping these guys out, us? So, you know, we get emails all the time saying, hey, I used to fly that airplane, or hey, I used to work on it, or hey, I was a program manager for this program. And so people are coming out of the woodwork, you know, and they are helping. And as almost as much or as important as donating cash is just volunteering time, because we need experts. because, you know, people like myself, you know, we were backseaters, but, you know, other than putting a plastic model kit together, I sort of don't know how to put together a Beechcraft King Air. But we've managed to get people to help us out. But we do need money. I mean, there's no question about it. So we have opportunities for people to either make a flat-out donation or buy a commemorative brick that will be kind of inserted into the park itself. Because we're going to build a display pad and, you know, put nice shrubbery around it and plaques and, you know, some of these concrete markers, you know, like tombstones or whatever, they're not cheap. And, you know, we want to make sure that it's something that people can go there. Let's say they're waiting to pick up one of their family members coming to visit Disney World or something like that. And they want a few moments to reflect, you know, and rather than kind of looking at their phone in the parking lot or driving circles around the airport waiting for their people to come in, they can hang out there and take a look and read something and learn something about not only, of course, our aircraft, but the B-52 and the role that Orlando played in our military history, in our defense of our nation. A lot of people don't realize the MCO in Orlando is from, you know, McCoy, Colonel McCoy, who flew B-47s out of that air base at one time. So a lot of history in Orlando, and we really want to remind people as Orlando grows and becomes, as the nation grows and becomes more disconnected, I think, in some ways, you know, with our history, to remind them, you know, what we did there.
That's great. If Colonel Joe's behind it, it will not falter. This is a guy that gets things done. So, including
it's nice
the reception,
in our
I'm
court,
telling you,
you know?
Yeah, he including the reception at my wedding. I'm telling you, the guy is just an incredible guy, an incredible guy. He is a true American hero, and I'm glad to hear that he's involved in this. You know, I bring this up.
He's a legend.
Well, he is, and I bring this up because your own father is a hero in such a way for you. There's so many ties to this. You know, and Andrew, I know you through social media and through everything else, but, I mean, I want folks that are listening tonight, and the reason we're covering these two incredible projects that are going on right now is because so many folks that are out there, maybe they're not multimillionaires and they don't have enough money to go out and buy a P-51 or a Tiger Cat. Oh, man, wouldn't that be cool? Or whatever it may be. You know, they want to get involved. They want to do something, and they want to leave their mark in aviation. This is a great way to do that, and I want to know your story, because how did you go from the guy sitting on the couch reading about this stuff and everybody else doing it to the guy doing it? What was that track like? Tell me about that.
It was an amazing process. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, when you leave military service, you get on with your new life, whatever. But there's certain aspects that you can't leave behind, and some of those are the real fond memories. And as time went on, I started to wonder whatever happened to our aircraft. You know, where did they end up? You know, one always assumes, especially when it comes to retired aircraft, they'll end up somewhere at Davis Monthan, you know, in Arizona or something like that. Well, in this particular case, somehow or another, when the Army decided to retire the entire U-21 fleet, our airplanes ended up ultimately at the salvage yard of J.W. Duff Aircraft Salvage in Denver, Colorado, at the old Stapleton Airport. And, you know, this is just as the Internet, you know, version 1.0 is coming along. You're able to do some searches here and there and find pictures and whatnot. And as time went by, eventually I reached out to Mr. Duff and asked him what he thought about perhaps donating an aircraft. And he was more than willing to sell me one, but, you know, that came with a price, and it was not something that was in my budget. But, you know, sadly, he passed away, and the salvage yard went into an estate sale, and it was gobbled up by another company. And when I reached out to the new company, they said, yeah, listen, we'll give you a good deal. We're not into making money. We just want to clear the lot. And I said, great. So I went to my friends in the reserves and said, hey, we have an opportunity to get the airplane back. You guys want to try? And of course they put me in charge because I came up with the idea. So I reached back only a few months later, and the aircraft was gone. We sold it. Like, oh, who did you sell it to? Dynamic Aviation. They are the company, the outfit in Bridgewater, Virginia, who bought every other U-21 of the retired Army fleet back in the early 90s, except for these examples. So I reached out to Mr. Stoltzfus himself, and Ken Stoltzfus, and I said, would you donate one? And he said, yes. So, like, great. Now I've got to raise money to bring the airplane here. So that's what we did. And, I reached out to my friends, created a social media page, got a 501c3, and we were off to the races.
Wow, I love the story. And of course, it goes back even further than that. Your interest in military aviation started with your father, who has such a cool story. Tell us that story, because I've heard it briefly, but it's a great one.
Well, I feel like a carbon copy of almost everyone else that comes on the show, because we all talk about how, it all started when our dad took us to the airport and watched airplanes land. And I'm certainly no exception to that story. But, in my particular case, my dad was he went to aviation tech school in Havana, Cuba, back in the 50s. And he joined the Cuban Air Force, and this is the Revolutionary Air Force. This is after Castro. And he was a crew chief on the B-26s that were in Cuba at the time. And as luck would have it, he got out of the Cuban Air Force weeks before the Bay of Pigs invasion, and where all the aircraft were destroyed on the ground or involved in combat. So he missed that whole thing, fortunately, because maybe I wouldn't be here if he was. But he left the country shortly thereafter, came to the United States, and the very first thing he did when he hit the ground was enlist in the U.S. Air Force. And so he ultimately became a crew chief on T-28 Trojans at Moody Air Force Base in Valdosta, Georgia. And then flash forward a little bit, he ultimately gets a degree in mechanical engineering from San Diego State, and he worked for NASA at the Kennedy Space Center for 28 years, putting shuttles into the orbit. And his youngest son is Lieutenant Colonel, who's about to retire next year. His youngest son was a squadron commander at Moody Air Force Base 40 years after my dad was there. 30 years after my dad arrived in the country, the U.S. military and the Air Force sent him to language school because his English wasn't so hot. And so they taught him English. And then 30 years later, his son, me, went to the same language school to learn Spanish because we grew up only speaking English in the house. So, we've got an amazing tie-in with, space shots and B-26s. And my youngest brother also flew Looking Glass as well as a logistics officer, airborne logistics officer. So big tie-ins. And the other brother, I shouldn't forget him, he's an engineer with Lockheed Martin building the Joint Air-to-Surface Strike Missile.
Well, a small commitment there and a gift of service from your family, the Rodriguez family, holding up the end of the thing.
Right.
Man, thanks for your service. And the RU-21A Memorial Project, which needs your help, whether it's time, treasure, or your talents, whatever it may be, how can folks find out about you? I know the website's there, and it's quick linked in the show, but where else can they find you?
We've got a Facebook page. I think almost any Google search, if you type in RU-21A Project, you'll either arrive at our memorial page or you'll arrive at our Facebook page. And, I invite everyone to check it out for a quick history lesson because it's really a unit page. And so what you'll find there are photos of, U-6A Beavers and U-1A Otters that were initially flown in that role of electronic warfare's intelligence gathering before the King Airs and before the Twin Bonanzas. You'll see pictures of what it was like in Vietnam for the pilots and for the crew members. And, you'll really pick up a lot of background on what we do and understand that what we did is the basis for everything that we're doing today in Iraq and Afghanistan. There's aircraft today flying, doing the same kind of mission that we can't imagine the technologies they have on board those aircraft. It's amazing work.
We're talking about rivet joint and J-STARS and everything else that's going on up there, but the ISR platforms are remarkable.
ISR platforms with MC-12 Liberty and Task Force Odin and Guardrail 5 and Proved Guardrail and all sorts of great stuff that's out there that has their start with what we did.
Wow, remarkable. And I want to ask you about this because this is a small airplane when it comes down to it. I mean, the King Air is not a very big airplane. This had to be a pretty tough machine to be on for the number of hours that you were probably inside your seat doing your mission. Tell us about a mission, what it was like for the sensor operator, the guy in the back. doing the job, the grunt work, if you will, on these missions. Because the pilot, this is going to sound terrible, but I mean, the pilot gets you guys over the mission operation area, and then you conduct the mission. What is it like in the back of this thing? Because this is a rare occasion where the crew is really the shining star of this thing, not the guy waving out of the front window necessarily. Tell us about a mission.
It's always been kind of funny, you know, when the mission commander is actually an enlisted guy, and you know, the warrant officers or the pilots, the officers up front are basically taking directions from us as to, you know, what we need to do. And so, yeah, the pilots would get us on track, and then we'd fly the approved track, and we would coordinate with them. You know, in this particular model, there was two seats for the guys in back. One guy was running the intercept radios, and the other guy was running the DS, the direction finding computers. And each of us would tip each other off whenever we'd have a target, what we thought was a radio signal that we needed to listen to. On came the recorders, on came the computers, and we did our work. Sometimes, it was on oxygen, depending on if we needed to climb up. This aircraft in particular was not pressurized, so we had masks and whatnot. And for 4.5, sometimes 5 hours, you're there kind of drilling holes in the sky, but you're doing a lot of work. You're listening. You're employing your language skills or your Morse code skills, and you're also, jotting things down and getting reports ready and tape recordings and all this stuff, all this classified material that kind of needs to be then organized when you get back on the ground and analyzed and reported on. So it makes for an interesting environment to do that kind of work. It was not a short sleeve environment because not too many other people who did our job, meaning linguists or interceptors, also did water survival training and high altitude training and all that kind of stuff. It made for an interesting environment. And of course, it was so much fun.
Well, I want to put this into perspective because you brought up a point here. As an enlisted guy in the Army, they sent you immediately to language school. So you go to Presidio there in Monterey, California, which is truly heaven on earth. And you never get to see it because you have to become fluent in a foreign language in how many months?
It all depends on the language. My Arabic roommate, the guy studying Arabic, he went through, in the time that he was there, he went through 3 Spanish linguists. So he kept studying, and then a new guy would show up, he'd go for Spanish, he'd be there 6 months and he'd leave, and then another guy would show up and he'd be there for 6 months and he'd leave.
Think about that, though. I mean, 6 months to learn Spanish, to become not proficient, but fluent in a foreign language, that's nuts. That's nuts. It's hard because the Army wants it to be hard. Incredible.
Right. But they put you in a nice environment to do it.
Well, they do. Sure. I'm not saying that. But now you're out fighting for your country by listening to these transmissions. Now, tell us about this, because you were flying anti-narcotic missions down there. And I can only imagine that the drug lords and whoever else you're flying against, they probably were not as sophisticated as some of these foreign militaries that the previous guys and gals would have been flying in. So how, if you have a, down in the Gulf of Mexico or wherever you're at, flying down there, and there's obviously a lot of Spanish, what are you listening for at that point to say, hey, I think this may be worth checking out? I mean, what is that fine line? I mean, this is a needle in a haystack, I would imagine.
Yeah, it really was. And unlike, working legitimate foreign military targets, you could almost rely on them for their clockwork and their predictability. And, when you're dealing with somebody off the farm and the next thing you know, he's a kicker on an airplane, kicking bales out into the water off the coast of Florida or whatever, or back home setting up the base, it's chaotic. It's very confusing. Is this guy a fisherman? Is this guy a farmer? And then what kind of slang is he using? All that stuff, analysis and kind of gave us the best possible way of doing our job. A lot of those through you know, classified methods and whatnot. But, you know, we did the best we can. It was a crazy, chaotic thing to be involved with. But, again, so much fun.
And to understand this mission here, you're listening. You're the guy in the seat listening to these transmissions on some type of high power scanner, for lack of a better word. The other guy is back there. When you get a fix on a signal, the other guy back there with the direction finding equipment, then I'm guessing he can plot a course and figure out where this is coming from, and then you can make a decision point for somebody else at that point to go down and investigate. That's the role that this thing had. So if you're listening to this show tonight and you see a King Air buzzing around, if you see an RU-21A someday, then you're going to understand just how critical this information is that we gather. And I mean, Andrew, the work that you were doing back then was really on the cutting edge. And the work that the 138th was doing back in Vietnam, truly, as crude as it was cutting edge technology back then that all of these folks in the signals intelligence side of it carry on with today. So it's a worthy platform that I hope you can save, and I hope you can get it up there on display here real soon. Give folks the final thought tonight as we kind of bring this segment to a close here, Andrew.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, you're not going to be able to take your family and go just anywhere to see an RU-21A. There's only going to be one, and it's going to be in Orlando, hopefully. And you know, we just want people to understand that, you know, reservists did this mission. Female warrant officer pilots did this mission. They, you know, female soldiers, people who were coming from all walks of life, and they were your neighbors. And so, you know, the next time you see somebody on a Saturday morning heading off in uniform to drill, remember that, you know, they're just not spending 8 hours in a room and coming home and collecting a paycheck. Odds are very good, just like we were, you know, we were doing something really important for the country. So that's the takeaway of me. This memorial honors all their efforts. The people who came before us, the people who came after us, people doing it currently, it's all about recognizing everyone's efforts to defend the country.
Well said, Andrew Rodriguez. Thank you so much. We do have a question, and I think I didn't want to get to it. But we heard the email tone go off, which if you'd like to send an email or call in tonight, we have just a few seconds left here. We could still get it in. Phone number, though, will be open all night, and I know the phones are going to light up when Ralph Royce comes on the Texas Warbird Report later tonight. There are guys they're just waiting. I can feel it tonight. They're waiting to call up and probably harass Ralph. The number tonight, 478-787-4768. You can also send an email to just matt@warbirdradio.com. And we can get it right on. This is one that was sent in here from Kelly. Kelly writes in tonight and says, "Hey, Andrew, so many of these projects wind up falling into disrepair. I know you're working hard now to save it initially, but what's the long-term maintenance plan for your project?" Great question. And that, of course, Andrew, is still down the park, but I'm sure you guys have a plan for the RU-21A.
Well, yeah, just like the Kittinger F-4, we have to come to an agreement with the city of Orlando and the airport authority. And what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to, before they'll let us put the aircraft in the ground, they're going to want us to show that we've got a bank account with a sizable sum of money that'll be used as in escrow as a maintenance fund. And so we are committing ourselves for the long term, that there'll always be money to paint it every, you know, 5 or 10 years, or, you know, power wash it every year. And of course, as long as we're around as veterans, we're going to take the best care until the last one of us drops. And hopefully our kids and grandkids will pick up where we left off. But we are kind of, and I think it's a totally fair thing. I think it's a fair thing to ask us to own the memorial, literally, you know, because we're essentially loaning it to the city, or you know, it's going to be still our airplane no matter what, and we've got to take care of it. So it's on us, and we need to raise the funds to help do that.
There you go. Well, that's well said. And the reason I brought that up is because it has truly changed from the days of a couple of guys getting an airplane and putting it on a stick out in front of the, you know, their local town hall or the VFW or whatever it was. And that was the extent of it. I mean, nobody really thought much further than that. But today, we realize these things are national treasures, and you know, there's hopefully going to be a few in museums, and then maybe this one where everyone can see it right there at the Orlando airport. I just think it's going to be terrific. How many of these, though, are left that will be dispersed? Or is this it?
Well, you know, as far as RU-21A models are concerned, you know, yeah, this is it. The sister ships, other RU-21s, amazingly got a second life with dynamic aviation, and they are used today. Like, literally, some of the aircraft we flew in Vietnam are the lead aircraft for firefighting work. You know, they pop the smoke right before, you know, where they want the tanker right behind them to drop the water. They use it to do seeding and bug killing, and some are outfitted for some ISR work around the world. So those airplanes, you know, are doing the work that we started, just in civilian clothes.
There you go. Well, Andrew Rodriguez, thanks for coming on, and I hope that folks will make a donation today and at least come out and get in touch with you. Your email address is plastered all over this website there that's quick linked into the show story tonight. You can find him on Facebook, but get involved with this, especially if you're down in Florida and you're a hometown person down there. Get involved with this and help these vets out. Andrew Rodriguez, thanks for coming on tonight.
Thanks, Matt. It's been a pleasure. Thanks so much.
All right, folks. We'll be right back with Jason Capra right after this.
This is Word Radio.
Jason Capra here, asking you to help us save the C-53 Beat City Baby from the scrapper's torch. Folks, every dollar goes directly towards the restoration so that we can fly her again. Donate now at www.vintagewingsinc.com. That's vintagewingsinc.com. Our time is limited, and the need is now. So again, please go to www.vintagewingsinc.com. And help us save our C-53 Beat City Baby.
Live from the land of the free, because of the brave, this is Warbird Radio. This is...
I'm not sure what that was, but apparently the liner machine is just, it's ready to go, man. Listen, I want to thank Andrew Rodriguez for coming on tonight. I also want to thank each and every one of you for listening. As we continue with the rest of the show tonight, Jason Capra, he's a young guy, too, that's out there driving around one day, finds a C-53 sitting on a grass strip out there in Beach City, Ohio. And what do you do when you see a C-53 all sort of, not abandoned, but certainly rather disheveled? I mean, it's just sitting there in the woods, not in the woods, but off the grass strip there. Got a bunch of dirt and grime on it. Well, if you're Jason Capra, you instantly swing into action and you say, my God, I got to save this thing. Somebody has, they've left a C-53 sitting out in the field. What I better do is form a 501c3 and then work my tail off over the next few months to raise some money and get this thing flying again. Well, that's what he's done. He approached the owner, and literally 2 months ago is when Jason Capra discovered this airplane. And he is making it happen. You met him last week on the show, and I invited him back just to give us an update on where this project is. And I'm telling you, you're going to be blown away by this. Here is Jason Capra.
All right. Well, you know, I was really flattered and honored by everybody that donated after our last radio interview. Literally in a matter of a week, we raised close to $2,300, which is phenomenal. However, you know, as we discussed earlier on the show, we are a far way away from our goal, our maximum goal of $150,000. So, you know, right now, since March 15th, since we started collecting money, we've raised altogether probably about $11,000, which for 2 months is phenomenal. But again, you know, we're racing the clock here. And the airplane, I can't stress this enough, it's sitting outside, uncovered, and in the elements. And I know it's been there for the last 20 some years, but the more work we do to it and the longer it sits outside, the worse it's going to get. So I want to get this airplane inside and ferried over to our hangar as soon as possible. And again, you know, we're against that time crunch of the second buyer waiting in the wind of wanting to take the airplane and part it out. And you know, we've been making a lot of great progress on the airplane. We've got the air stair door completely restored. We've got the cockpit is starting to be completely revitalized and brought back to life cosmetically. We've been ripping the interior apart. But again, as I said in the other interview, prior to the airplane being 100% paid off, there's only so much that the owner is allowing us to do to the airplane. And the heavy stuff, which I would really like to start focusing on, which is, you know, getting the engines brought back to life, recovering the flight controls with fabric, the flight control cables need replaced, all that stuff that actually means getting the airplane flying. I'm not allowed, and we are not allowed to start doing that until the airplane is 100% ours. So, you know, as great as this cosmetic stuff is, and it definitely is a step in the right direction, we cannot get the airplane to the point where we can start working on it to fly it until we have it paid for. And I can't stress enough that, you know, the donations are our biggest focus right now, and paying the airplane off is our greatest hurdle. So that's where we're at. We still need the money. And again, whether it's $10, $100, $1,000, whatever anyone is willing to pitch in and help out, get this airplane back in the air where she belongs, is greatly appreciated.
And again, you are waiting to leap into action here with the heavy lifting as soon as this thing is paid off. And the thing I want to stress, Jason, is last week we started sort of this campaign off. We did not do a thunderous advertising push because the money's not there. And by a thundering advertising push, what I mean is there was a lot of money that was raised in several social media campaigns over the last few years. And there was money that was put up to raise that money. In this case, every dollar that you raise goes towards the airplane. There is no administrative cost that is taking over. Every dollar that you donate goes to this airplane, because you and the other volunteers, you're the ones that are shouldering the burden for whatever Facebook money is spent, whatever advertising money is spent. Every nickel that you raise, though, goes to this airplane at this point, which is incredible. So I want people to keep that in mind, because if you're considering donating to a charity, there's always money that comes out for administrative costs. Right now, literally every dollar that you give to Vintage Wings Incorporated goes to the airplane and is put to work right now. So we have a limited amount of time to save this airplane from the buyer that wants to take this thing and part it out, and that's the business that they're in. We get it. But we have a chance now to save an example of a C-53 that is tied not only to World War II, but to some pretty big people. Tell me about the research efforts just in the last few minutes, because this airplane is tied to Miller. Glenn Miller, by that name, is tied to Doolittle, is tied to MacArthur even. And I know that you're making great efforts on the research side of this as well.
Right, absolutely. And you know, on top of the World War II history, which is phenomenal, the other thing that really kind of brings to light what Warbirds are all about is, again, promoting aviation and getting younger people involved who want to not only keep the history alive, but to get people into aviation, to want to pursue it as a career, maybe a passion in their life. The airplane that we're restoring, 412-0095, was for almost 30 years the governor of Ohio's airplane, Governor Rhodes, through the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And Governor Rhodes used to be called the champion of aviation in the state of Ohio. And while he was the governor of the state of Ohio, this airplane and him literally opened an airport in every county in the state of Ohio for general aviation. Prior to Governor Rhodes coming along, there almost every county didn't have an airport. And it was Governor Rhodes' personal mission while he was in office to make sure that every county in the state of Ohio had an airport, and that they were coined the phrase of saying, a mile of interstate gets you a mile of interstate, but a mile of runway will get you anywhere in the world. And I actually believe Governor Rhodes was the one that first coined that phrase back in the 1970s. So our DC-3 was his pride and joy. He loved this airplane with all his heart. And the airplane took part in an opening ceremony of every airport that they christened in their tenure with the state of Ohio. The airplane was used to cut the ribbon, whether doing a low pass or taxiing through the ribbon at the airport, to promote aviation and getting people involved in understanding the importance of aviation. So, you know, again, the airplane was definitely in World War II, as we talked about earlier, from 42 to 45. but yet another mission in the airplane's history, which it's going to continue to do in this phase of its life, is promote aviation and promote why we do what we do, and hopefully inspire somebody else to want to get involved in aviation, whether it's flying airplanes, working on them, being an air traffic controller, every facet of it. This airplane's mission now is to keep that flame going.
Well, it's well said, Jason.
You know, it's such a neat history that the airplane has on top of its World War II history. And we want to keep that flame alive, and we want to keep promoting what we love so much. And, of course, that's flying and aviation.
Well, you've made it really easy for folks to donate. They can click on the quick link in the show story. It'll go right to the donation page. They can donate directly via the GoFundMe site that is linked onto your site. We have it linked here. So literally, folks, just click on that right now. Do it while you're listening to this podcast or the live show. Click on that. Make a $10 donation, $20 donation, whatever it needs to be. Now, look, if you want to go further than that, Jason, I know you're set up to accept some large donations that come with some benefits, such as being a crew member on the airplane, et cetera. There's a lot of ways to do that. They can find out about that on your website, which is, again, quick linked into the show story. So no matter if you're listening to the live show right now or if you're listening to a recorded podcast of this show, go on there, make the donation. Do it right now while it's top of your mind. And in $10, $20, it goes a long way. How many donors did we have in the last week? I'm not talking about dollars, but how many donors made up that $2,200?
Yeah, since we made the broadcast last week, we had approximately 34 people donate. And I know that doesn't sound like a lot, but I said $2,200 from 34 people. That's a nice chunk of change.
And, yeah, 64 like I said, bucks. I mean, from everyone. Right. That's great.
Yeah, if we can get everybody that's listening to keep that up. And, I mean, we had quite a few, you know, donations for a couple hundred dollars here and there, $1,000 from one person. You know, that rate and just everybody that's listening, like I said, you know, we spend $10 a day on a lot more frivolous things like McDonald's or, you know, Starbucks or whatever, and we don't even bat an eye. And this $10 can go towards something that when you see it at the air show, you can take a lot of pride in knowing that, hey, you know, that I helped contribute to getting that airplane flying. I helped a dream fester into reality, and I helped promote aviation and save a piece of history.
Well, I just think it's such a cool deal. I really do, and I drive this thing home because 2 months ago, you were literally driving down the back roads of Ohio when you saw this thing. You're a young guy. You sprang into action. 2 months down the road, here's the 501c3 that people can donate to, and you guys are out there getting this thing ready to ferry back to a hangar, which is just, I mean, it's remarkable. It's the every man can do it story, Jason. So if folks want to get involved in this and become a part of this movement, this truly grassroots movement to save Buckeye One, better known now as the Beach City Baby, you can do it, but you've got to act quickly. Otherwise, this thing, it will become the, you know, we could have done it story, and we don't want that to happen. We want to be able to walk out there and see this thing parked in your hangar someday, man. So we're pulling
absolutely
for you.
And, you know, the other day, Matt, I was out there working on the airplane. It was pouring down rain. And again, this is just the amount of work that our volunteers are putting into this. I mean, we're not getting paid. We're doing it because we love it. And the other day alone, it was raining, and instead of going home and sparing the day, I decided to just keep working on the plane. I spent almost 7 hours alone in the cockpit, stripping and taking parts off the throttle quadrant, which we've completely got primed and ready for paint, and just taking the hardware off and sandblasting it and watching this faded and the decayed parts come back to life and be repainted and put all the decals back on and the markings and be reassembled. I mean, I can't wait to see the rest of the airplane match what we've done so far. And what we have done is little, and we're making steps. I with the proper funding, it's going to be something that we can all be proud of. And I can't wait to show this airplane and share it with everybody that's out there listening to this broadcast.
Jason Capra from Vintage Wings Incorporated, the home of the C-53 project, Beach City Baby. Thanks for being here. Let's go make some donations right now, folks, while you're there. Jason, again, thanks for coming back on, bud.
No, thanks for having me, Matt. It's always a pleasure.
I tell you what, that guy just fires me up, man. Every time I hear him, I want to go out there and do good work with Jason. So, yeah, make the donation if you can. Any amount helps, either to Andrew Rodriguez tonight or to Jason Capra there. We really want to push these guys over the edge. Jason has the timeline right now. So he is truly in need of the funding to push him over the edge. And, you know, every little bit helps. If we can show some momentum, it's my hope that others will want to get involved in this and make this happen. Next week, just so you know, next week on the show, test pilot Elliot Seguin will be joining us. Now, Elliot is not a warbird guy, as many of you know. He works on the modern aircraft that maybe someday soon will become warbirds. But Elliot Seguin, a civilian test pilot, is going to teach us what we need to know about test piloting. Now, why are we having this on? Zane Adams standing by in the wings there, just waiting. Zane, you can imagine the benefits of hearing from a civilian test pilot, can't you? I mean, we're flying these vintage military airplanes around, and a lot of them come in and out of restoration, post-annual flights this time of year. I mean, this is important stuff. So Elliot, one of the real front runners up at Reno, and he races the Wasabi team. I mean, this guy is the it guy right now when it comes to civilian test piloting. And I would say more, but I don't know what I can talk about and what I can't talk about.
Well, civilian test pilot, I mean, like you said, bringing these airplanes out of annual, and most of them are experimental, the Warbird, registered right. experimentals.
Right.
You know, it's test flying.
Well, and, you know Elliot Seguin. I mean, you know what he's doing. He's out in Mojave there. And there's some super secret squirrel stuff that this guy's working on. We're gonna pump him for everything we can get. I mean, White Knight. You remember that? Richard Branson now has exactly. Burt Rutan. I mean, this is the guy that flew this stuff. I mean, how cool is that? That he's going to come. He's been on before, but he's going to come back on and talk
Mr.
to
cutting
us.
Cutting edge. Civilian aviation is nothing. No joke nowadays. With
I'm telling you, this stuff
with Cessna jets that'll that run out there at what Mach 9.2 on cruise and 40 right. plus right. thousand feet. I mean, it's real stuff. So,
well, I'm looking forward to this. So, Elliot Seguin is next week from out there and in Mojave, and just man, this is I love following his stuff. They have a fly-in out there that I would just love to go to, but Elliot's going to be on next week, as well as Rick Peterson, my fellow colleague, Rick Peterson, air show announcer from Canada, does a lot of shows. He's fresh back from Japan, where he was at the Iwakuni Friendship Days show over there, and is going to talk to us about a Japanese Zero.
And yeah, I saw that little piece of hangar. Video. Isn't that cool? They've got that concrete bunker.
Yeah, I mean, a real World War II hangar that they saved, and so he's going to be on to talk about that. Who's on the Texas Warbird Report tonight?
Yeah, we've got none other than, at least famous in our circles, Ralph Royce, air boss to the stars, I guess you might say.
Well, air boss and Warbird pilot himself. I mean, there's nothing certainly. Ralph hasn't flown.
Yeah, his bio tells us he's got an unlimited right. piston
right.
ticket. So,
Right. Are you sure you want to have him on, though? I mean, Ralph's been on before, and he's a character to interview, and I don't know how much of it. I'm going to be curious to see how much you'll get out of him.
Well, we'll see. We'll pull and tug, and threaten him with his
he's
dinner or something.
Right, he's a trivia hound too. I don't know if you know this or not, but
yeah.
he is a trivia hound. So we got to ask him some early CAF stuff. You know what? Look, he's not on right now, so we can talk behind his back.
Sure,
but and everybody listening will talk behind. Well, they'll help us out. Hopefully, maybe they'll call in tonight with a question. If you want to know some early CAF history, this is the guy to ask because he was there. Yeah. And, I mean, in the golden days, being down there in Harlingen when I was a kid, when Zane was a kid, running around out there, these are the stories you want to hear. Then you're going to have to call him tonight and find out about it because hopefully he'll talk if you call in tonight. 478-787-4768 is the number to call later on the Texas Warbird Report. Has he been on your show? I'm trying to remember about this.
No, he hasn't.
He's been on. I know he's been on this show, but Ralph is a phenomenal individual. I can't wait to hear what all he talks about tonight.
Yeah, we'll see what we can pull. Like I said, we'll see what we can pull out of him. And I'd certainly like to talk about the early days of the CAF with him or some, and see if we can't, at least give us something to.
Well, and we got to talk to him about his famous landing in the SBD Dauntless when the engine quit.
There you go. See,
you got to bring up that one. That's a really good story. And there's a lot of folks listening tonight. I don't think they're prepared for this. I'm a little worried, to be honest, because I'm afraid the phone lines are going to light up with performers and airshow call. I could be wrong. I may have to watch them, but we're gonna be standing by at the ready here at the top of the hour.
As long as the Texas T6 Mafia kids don't call in, we'll be okay.
Well, we've been discreet. I mean, in promoting this, because we're after the history, but I'm sure that, as you said, the Rugrats are going to call in here in a few minutes and probably harass him. Ralph's pretty intimidating, is he not?
At these
briefings, you know. I mean, he's a commanding individual.
Yeah.
When he comes on,
it's certainly fun to listen to him on the radio at an air show, and and behind the scenes, what happens at an air show with an air boss, you know, 90% of the people have no clue what's going on there. And it's interesting.
The announcer has no clue usually. Yeah. So
yeah, I've seen that side too. Yeah.
You've been there with me a time or two. Well, it's been fun. And look, we're doing something else cool. There's an experiment that I want to talk to you about, because I'm going to have to use your great moderator skills. You help out with our Facebook page, and I'm just curious about it. I'm just going to throw this out there. I joke about this a lot in small circles, but this thing is gotten it's sort of taken off. No pun intended. But we're officially moving forward now with a new community that we're going to launch called Airshow by Request. So for all of the shows that we do with Warbird Radio. And if it takes off and becomes bigger than this, then great. We're still going to power it and put our resources behind it. But the goal here is to bring people, airshow fans that are at the airshow, sort of in on the action. And so if I'm there, this is going to be a direct link. Because I say me because I'm the only one doing it right now. But if I'm there
right now,
announcing the show, and you want to send me a question or a, hey, Matt, you got that wrong. Or, hey, can I see this? Can I do, whatever it is, long distance request and dedication, if you want, whatever it may be, this is going to be a community that we can all come together in and post your stuff live as it's happening. We can discuss airshow work, whatever we want to do. We're going to power it. We're going to put up the money for it. But I think it's going to be kind of fun. So, like, if you're at a show and you're like, dude, that last pass that he made was awesome. Can we get it again? I missed the photo pass. Well, then maybe we can pull it off if we have time.
Yeah.
So this is how you can sort of correspond. It'll be a direct link to me in the announcer stand and to the performers, hopefully.
Should I ask the air boss about that idea?
No, I wouldn't. You can ask him whatever you want, but all right. So what do you say we go refresh our beverages here? We're going to play terrible music, thanks to the lawmakers that won't allow us to play good music, and then we'll be back in about 5 minutes from now. With the start of an all-new Texas Warbird Report. How cool is that, Zane? We're going
to
make it happen, bud.
It's exciting.
All right, Zane, stay with us. We'll be right back, folks, with the Texas Warbird Report. Zane Adams here at the top of the hour. My thanks, though, to each and every one of you for being here tonight. Seriously, thanks for coming on. You can find us online again right there at warbirdradio.com. If you've clearly found us once, so I'm quite confident you can find us again. Go through some of the old shows. And take a look. I was listening to one of Chris Henry's shows the other night from the Warbird, the old Warbird Rescue show. What a terrific series that is. Ryan Keough's stuff with the old Wix show there, the Warbird Information Exchange show. There's so many great shows on there. Go back through the archive. I think you'll be amazed at some of the folks who we've had on through over the years. Over 2 million listeners now worldwide. It's incredible the amount that this station has grown. And if you want to stay in touch with us, be one of the first people to like it. This is in its infancy. We haven't even really sent it to the proofreader yet, but I'm going to just go ahead and say it. It's facebook.com/airshowbyrequest. We're going to grow this thing organically. So if you want to be the first person to like it, I haven't even liked it yet. By all means, join the experiment. We'll debut it at the Rhode Island show in June. That will be the first time that we actually use it. So if you're planning to go there, come on out and see us. Again, my thanks to Jason Capra, to Andrew Rodriguez, to each and every one of you. Be sure and thank a veteran if you see one. So long for now, everybody. Talk to you next week with Elliot Seguin and Rick Peterson.